Okay, Katie and Kay listeners, this is Zed the Liberal Gladiator, and we've got another exciting show, Weight Off Your Shoulders. And in my studio, I've got Dr. Bruce Bowen, who's going to be discussing what do you do during party time, which is that season where people seem to, quote, gain their winter weight, or that insulation sometimes I've heard it called. So, doctor, right at it.
Okay. Well, I think this is really an important time of the year. What's really interesting is that people gain weight because they typically have less structured diets at a particular time. And we know that adults, at least in the United States, that starting around this time, Halloween, and then going through Valentine's Day in February, is the highest risk period for Americans. Statistically, in fact, if you gain all your weight during the holiday season, you're not got very good averages of getting it all off. In other words, you put on a little bit each year. And if you take vacations, things like that, people typically actually don't often gain the most of the weight. It's typically just adding it every year, starting during the holiday season. And that's because there's so many things that bombard you at the time to encourage you to overeat.
Okay. And this is a very seasonal situation, obviously. And you know, so, you know, let's say, you know, Joe Blow and Susie Q, you know, come into some party and they don't have a massive active vacation plan where they're going to be going out and snorkeling and, you know, chasing after dolphins or something on the reef or whatever. Or maybe they haven't planned that, you know, that Amazon, you know, hike from Brazil, you know, crossing the Andes or some crazy thing like that. What does Joe Blow and Susie Q do when they walk into a room and they've got Aunt Mary's, you know, massive, you know, 3,000 calorie casserole piled on every plate, and then and 20 other samplings of things that are sitting right there, and someone says, "Oh, come on, Joe! I mean, aren't you going to try my, you know, my casserole?" Or, you know, or maybe John has a, you know, 6-pack of beer to go with that, and you know, John offers Joe, you know, some of that that beer or whatever.
Well, the first thing you want to do is try and plan ahead. Try and think about it. In fact, when we have structure in our lives, we tend to eat much better. It's when the life is unstructured that we don't. So going to a party without any forethought about what's going to happen before the party makes it a lot more difficult to roll with the punches, so to speak. So the first thing is making sure you drink plenty of water before you leave the house. Putting away 2 or 3 glasses of water is a great way to help curb the appetite initially, take the edge off of it, and also it tends to dilute out the alcohol too. Beverages are really important because alcohol is very good at disinhibiting eating behaviors. In other words, not only do you not forget what you eat, you tend to eat more than you should eat. And you don't keep very good track of how much you've put away. So if you're standing there and you're having an appetizer plate and you have a glass of wine in your hand and you finish one glass and then you're on that second glass, then you start forgetting how you're eating. And all those things, those little trays going by, or maybe you go to the trays, but you reach out, grab the trays of food, and you start eating. And the alcohol helps decrease any feedback that you maybe are getting full.
Okay, so alcohol isn't just inhibitory in terms of, you know, or disinhibitory towards people wanting to commit something like, say, criminal acts, robbing the 7-Eleven, you know, or doing some crazy stuff like that. Just a lot, you know, many smaller paper cuts that are also going on at the same time.
Yeah.
With food and drink and maybe even drinking more than that, you know, 1 or 2 drinks you may have planned on drinking.
Is that right?
So yeah. What does someone do about that?
Well, the first thing is to keep track of the alcohol. That's one of the key things is to is, you know, get in there and when you have your drink, you say, okay, that's number one, and you think about it for a minute, and so you remember, okay, that's how many drinks I've had, because it's a lot harder to go back and recall. So if you track the amount of alcohol you're drinking as you drink it, then you're much less likely to overdrink, or at least if you do overdrink, at least you know you're doing it intentionally.
All right. So, well, this is an absolutely valid, I think it's a valid question. Should someone who is planning on having a drink, or maybe a drink and a half or two drinks, should they have someone that's there to say, hey, listen, by the way, you know, you have had that two drinks you're planning on having and you should not have any more? I mean, how would you advise someone to have that kind of support, or what do they do? Or maybe they don't even have that support.
Yeah, well, and you're right, some people don't. Ideally, everyone should have that sort of plan in place, so that at least they have some idea of what they're getting into and someone to kind of back them up. And if you don't have someone to remind you to do that, then you just have to mentally rehearse it in your own mind before you go to the party that this is what you're going to do and you're going to stick with that plan. But it's always helpful if you have at least another person or two that you're with that can go along with what you plan on doing about, you know, how much drinking you're going to do.
Okay, so you might need a designated drink limiter.
Right, yeah.
And stop me from drinking!
Yeah. It's probably a good idea, particularly now, because we're going to really start getting into the holiday season, and it's very easy to overdrink. And the worst thing about some of the drinks is some of them are very, very high calorie, too. You know, if you have a margarita, it could be 400 or 500 calories, and that could blow your whole evening's plan for calories right there. So it's always helpful to plan ahead and think about, well, am I going to have wine? Am I going to have mixed drinks? Am I going to do something else like that? And then think about the parties themselves. You know, most of the time you're going to know what you're getting into when you go to a party of a friend, and think about the kind of things that they've had in the past. One of the things that people don't realize is that the first bite of any new food is a novel experience. It releases all the hormones in the brain that gives you pleasure when you eat. And so if you have a party where there's a lot of different foods there, each one of those bites of food, the first bite, is going to trigger a lot of pleasure. So it becomes a lot harder to control your eating behaviors when you've got a whole bunch of novel foods, particularly if they're foods you've never tried before. And so you have to have a bite, but then you really need to back off. You know, maybe walk around with the plate, maybe just hold the plate, but don't even eat off of it. And then give your brain time to enjoy that first bite, and then it will help blunt the eating behavior a little bit so that you're not just eating lots and lots of first bites. And so the best way to do that is to slow down.
All right, so if someone walks in and they've got a plan, and all of a sudden there's 30 or 40 presentations of different kinds of foods. Some of them are going to be, you know, horrible, you know, from my perspective, probably yours too. Yeah. And they're, you know, and you get this massive pressure. I mean, and maybe some things you just absolutely do not want to eat, but there's this overwhelming pressure. I mean, come on. I mean, should you just say, okay, I'm going to take like a tenth of a forkful, so you can honestly say, yes, I tried your stuff, whatever it is, and then move on, so you're not really, you know, wolfing down half of a pie as a sample.
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on what the situation is. If it's relatives and close relatives, and, you know, they really would be hurt if you didn't try it at all, then I'd say try a very small bite and then walk away from it and maybe have a big glass of water, too. The other is to prioritize the ones that you think you might actually want to enjoy, and then just not make them all. So if there's 20 different foods on the table, then, you know, it's not a horrible thing to get by with 8, you know, and just leave out the other 12 altogether. Don't even think about them. And then visualize and, you know, the order you want to do it, and then for goodness sakes, if you're going to do it, enjoy it. You know, pick out the foods that you think are the most enjoyable and appreciate them. I think that's unfortunately something in the American culture is that we eat way too fast and rapidly and don't give our food much thought anymore. And it tends to be just something that you have to get in and then get on with it. Or worse, you want to eat all the wrong things and not ever eat anything that's good. And so we could slow down, and that would help all of that.
Now, I'll say that sometimes when I go into you know, some parties, if there's something that I just am not going to eat, I'll say, hey, you know, I can't eat this right now, but could I get the recipe from you? Is that something that might work socially? I mean, it feels like that is okay for me. I'm comfortable doing that, but would you ever recommend that to someone?
That's what it depends then, if you're comfortable with it.
You don't want that chainsaw going off in the background if you're wrong, of course.
Women will get away with that easier than men will. But I think if you really show a true interest in the food and you ask some questions about it, sure, I think that would be a nice way to do it, particularly if you're really serious about it. I mean, if you're not really serious about it, then I'd say don't even go down that alley.
The chainsaw will go off.
because next time you see them, they'll be asking you whether you made the recipe yet or not. So I think you want to get particular about what you enjoy and then have some of that, enjoy it, get the recipes, the ones you truly do want to try, and then try and keep moving. Don't sit out.
Right. Otherwise, someone will say, hey, here, try this. Yeah. Just hand you the plate, and all of a sudden, oh, dadgummit. All right, so... is there, you know, are there some things that you would advise someone doing so that they can actually prevent the consumption of, you know, excessively caloric, foods that are just laden with massive amounts of, of sugars and, alcohol and potentially even some, other things you just don't want, and are like, very simple carbohydrates, things with a very high glycemic index.
Yeah, I think in general, what you want to start with is, like, as we'd already mentioned, a lot of water, because you want to really...
People take notes.
Yeah, drink lots of water. You know, if you're walking away from a party without about 4 or 5 glasses of fluid other than alcohol, you're probably not diluting it enough. and so that's a general rule. And in Colorado anyway, people don't drink nearly enough water anyhow. And keep in mind that your thirst mechanisms kick in, but they don't kick in right away. So you can get pretty dry before you actually start feeling thirsty. So you don't usually want to wait until you're feeling thirsty to start looking for fluids. You want to be including fluids. One of my friends in California who's a wine connoisseur, a pretty interesting fellow. But what he would never do is have 2 glasses of wine in a row. He would always have 1 glass of wine and then at least 1 big glass of water. And that's the way he would pace himself. And it's a pretty effective method because most of the time, most of us aren't getting thirsty quick enough anyhow. Okay. So if you substitute and work the rule that way, it's a lot easier to stay well hydrated. Then the second thing is to stay away from the really simple carbohydrates to start with, unless it's, again, something you really, really want to try. But keep in mind things like breads, pastries, jellies, anything with sugars added, honeys, things like that are going to have a higher number of simple carbohydrates. And then the first thing you want to try and find is a good vegetable dish. Looking for one that a big salad or something like a casserole dish that will make for a lot of volume and fill you up some. And that'll slow down the eating typically as well, because it's a lot harder to eat a salad fast than it is some other things. If you think about it, there's some things you can really put away a lot of calories very quick. But salads, it's not easy to do. So
you do have to chew it.
Yeah. And you use your head in terms of the dressing that's on it. There are some the number one dressing in the United States is the blue cheese. And, it's about 3.5 times as many calories as a vinegar and oil dressing. I mean, it's just a huge amount. So think about the salad dressings that are available and what you could do to make it a healthy start. And then when you get the salad in, the rest of it's going to go a lot easier. And you won't be as full because salad will also give you time to give your brain feedback that you've eaten something. The rule of thumb is about 20 minutes. Your brain needs about 20 minutes to figure out it's eaten and then give you appropriate feedback.
Okay. Now, is that also true with water? So if someone walks in and just knocked on some water, I mean, will they feel hydrated?
No, it does take some time to pull the water in. And, you know, worse, if you drink too much all at once and you're really dry, you actually can get sick to your stomach. Because
the
too much water coming in at one time and you just don't feel very good.
Okay. Well, that might make you not eating if you're feeling like crap.
All right.
I'm sorry, I can't eat. I feel crap. You know?
So that's always very important. And then let's go to the desserts for a minute. Everybody always fears the desserts. And I find that the best thing you can do is to visualize the dessert you did want to have, visualize the ones you want to walk by, and just picture it in your mind that, okay, this is how I will feel. I'll feel good if I go by and skip a dessert that I know I shouldn't eat. And there's another dessert. I'm going to have a small bite, and I'll really enjoy it. And then you play it by ear at that point.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And, so if someone walks by and they see some, I don't know what the most popular dessert is for people. I mean, I hardly ever eat desserts,
actually.
But yeah, what, I mean.
It's probably cheesecake or something like that,
suspect. All right. If someone walks by and that cheesecake triggers that, whatever, that happy memory of like, oh my God, this stuff tastes so good. I just got to have that bite. And that little voice on your shoulder is just pecking away at your ear. Oh my God, you got to have a bite of me. I taste really good. I'm going to get the best feedback ever. Oh, yummy, yummy, yummy. All right. What do you do? Is there some kind of like maybe mnemonic or something that someone can use to maybe diffuse that overwhelming surge of the visual association with good times and tasty buds that are completely satiated and you know, ready to roll?
Well, that's a good question. When I figure that out all the way, I'll let you know. One of the things with my weight loss patients I talk a lot about is that a lot of times people just eat food just to eat it, even if it's something they really don't like. And desserts are a great example of that. A lot of people feel guilty when they don't finish the dessert that they're given. So my mantra to them is I tell them, okay, just ask yourself a question. Is this dessert really worth the extra exercise and effort to lose weight to get rid of what you're going to get from eating that? And if the answer is yes, well, go for it. Yeah, I mean, that's an unusual dessert if you think about it. But if it's not, well, have that one bite and then just politely, subtly put the plate aside at some point and just don't nibble on it again, because it's the first bite that gives you the most pleasure anyway. And if it didn't really trigger a really wow sort of feeling when you had it, well, then why have it?
Yeah, this goes into something, because I think we brought up the cheesecake, but are there actually desserts that people can say, look, you know what, this is really relatively harmless, tastes great, low in calories, very, very little in a way of added sugars and simple carbohydrates. So if someone walks into the party and they see there's a choice of, you know, 10 desserts, is there a dessert class or family of desserts that is much lower in calories that people can pick and say, oh yeah, I've already had dessert or something?
That's a good question, because people's preferences of desserts vary so much that most of the time I find it's easier to find out what dessert that they really, really like and then figure out a way to diffuse a situation where that dessert might present itself. Because, you know, it's some of the desserts are very subtle in terms of how many calories they can have, but they can really be loaded a lot of calories. And others can be quite close to very healthy sorts of things that you would eat all the time. I think the biggest thing is, the biggest thing is whenever you make a processed food, a processed dessert, it's going to have a lot of sugar. If it has to balance something that has a sour component, or there's a lot of cream involved in it. So you want to think of things that are high in sugar, high in cream, and those are the kind of desserts that you would want to stay away from more.
Okay.
Now, the natural dessert is fruit. It's interesting because fruit is a really good food, but it's not an essential nutrient either. I mean, it has some components in it and some fluids and electrolytes in it that are useful. But for a replacement of commercial desserts, that's your best answer right there. It's a nature's design dessert for you. And then whenever you're getting in any processed food, all bets are off. Unless you know the recipe or you ask the hostess what's in the recipe, and then you can probably figure it out somewhat. Then that's why I said plan ahead if you can. If it's a sit-down dinner or something of that sort, most of the time the hostess is going to tell you what they're going to make for dessert anyway. And then look it up. You know, see what you think you can do with a dessert and still get out with a reasonable amount of food and not overeating.
Okay, so you walk in there, and, you know, frequently people will have pieces of, fruit literally sitting there just sliced, totally unprocessed other than the slicing and maybe the peeling associated mm-hmm. with it. So that would maybe be one of the things you would recommend to have, and perhaps having that, say, like right after a salad to avoid the barbecue with 5-6 of butter in it and God only knows what else. And so would that be the type of strategy people should look at? Because I mean, fruit is a natural dessert.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Another thing that you'd mentioned that I jumped kind of to desserts, but also forget that most people eat way too much animal fat in their diet. The average American is hitting about 60% of their calories in terms of animal products, and it's way more than we need. For instance, the amount of protein you need in a given day is only 1 gram per kilogram of protein, somewhere in that range, and that's about 4 ounces, which is about the size of your own palm. Which is as much protein as you need to have in an entire day. Well, we typically eat that much in one meal, and you just don't need that much. And that's where a lot more calories come at parties, along with the alcohol, is your extra fat.
Okay.
So that's a key component, is don't forget the entree.
All right, and I guess to that end, I think people should probably be acutely aware that that some of that stuff is just really genuinely gross. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on the show here. You know, listeners, I hope you took really good notes. This is an excellent strategy. And Bruce, how would we reach you?
My office is Sopris Medical Practice. I'm in the Mid-Valley Medical Center in Basalt. And my phone number is 927-1444.
All right. Thank you guys so much for coming in. And we're moving on.